Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, January 18th. I'm Ray Graff. To shake off the cold and the snow, today we hit the culinary road for a taste of Southern comfort food. And here to help us steer our way is Jasper Alexander, chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs, New York. He's like Elvis walked in the building. All of a sudden, all the fans are following him around like he's the Pied Piper. He's making a lot of people happy here today with the food he brought. You have a favorite Southern dish? You interested in learning how to make some comfort food from below the Mason-Dixon line? Give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Jasper Alexander, Southern Cooking. Your call's coming up on a Food Friday right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. This Food Friday, all about Southern cooking, and in the studio is a show favorite, Chef Jasper Alexander. He is the chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant, a Southern and soul food eatery in Saratoga Springs. Jasper is a Culinary Institute of America grad. He also beat Bobby Flay in a chicken frying contest on national TV. He's the author of Hattie's Restaurant Cookbook, Classic Southern and Louisiana Recipes. In 2017, Hattie's was represented at the National Fried Chicken Festival in New Orleans, and we talked about that. It was the festival's only vendor from a non-Southern state. Always great to have Jasper Alexander here. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much, Ray. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Our number to call is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk to Chef Alexander. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you're the shy retiring type. We'd love to hear from you, though. 800-348-2551. First of all, before we get to the incredible, possible Nobel Prize-winning stuff you've done here, and I got to tell you, there are a lot of happy people right now around the station.
We try to bring the happiness.
What's been new with you, man?
We have just been chugging along. I guess the newest thing that's happened is we just finished our last Mardi Gras. We've been doing a Mardi Gras benefit at Hattie's for about 17, 18 years now.
Yeah.
And we've decided to give it a rest for a while, but we went out with a bang. It was last Saturday. And,
is it just too much work? Why would you give it a rest?
It's a ton of work. Yeah, it's just a ton of work. We've been doing it for a long time, and we just wanted to sort of take a break.
Yeah.
And but it... It'll bring in well over $100,000. We had over 600 people there. It was a
wow.
Off without a hitch. It was huge. You know, it's about a day and a half worth of prep for every hour of the party. So,
yeah.
You know, it takes a while.
Absolutely.
To get it done.
Absolutely. But I mean, it's a legendary thing, and Hattie's is a legendary place to be. And anything new on the menu?
We have done some shifting around of things in the menu and put a few new things on. Absolutely. We did some small plate versions of things, so we scaled down some of the sizes of things just to give people more options, because you know we serve a pretty hearty portion and tradition with the restaurant and Southern food, and so trying to get people to be able to order more to one thing or bounce around a little bit and try different things, because most people, you know, a lot of our clientele has their mind made up before they even walk in the door, which is great, but sometimes we like to, you know, let them experience new things, so we're trying to make it easier for them to try new things.
Well, maybe you could make it compulsory and have a little checklist. You've already had that chicken.
That's right. Keep a fine set of data.
You brought some amazing things today, and I will start with something that really knocked me off my feet, and that's it seems like a simple thing, but what you did was something special, and that's the chicken salad
sandwich. Chicken salad, yeah. Everything I brought today, I brought from the Chicken Shack, which is sort of the fast casual side of Hattie's up in Wilton. And the chicken salad is a favorite. It's got apples in there and cranberries, and lemon zest, lemon juice, celery seed, mayonnaise, a little celery and onion. So it's got a little bit of crunch, and it's got the apples in there to give it a little sweetness and sort of offset things. And
I love the sweetness out of that.
Yeah,
because you got a little zing, and it's also very light.
It's not bathed in mayo.
Nope.
And the bread's just a big piece of Texas toast, you know, and so the bread sort of collapses around it, so it doesn't add a whole lot of substance to it. We brought a grilled chicken sandwich, which is great. We brine the chicken.
How long?
About 12 to 24 hours, you know, as much as 36. But
and what are you brining it in?
In salt and, you know, pretty typical brine. So all brines are going to have, you know, ratio of salt and sugar to water. So it's salt and sugar. This has lemon juice, garlic, thyme, rosemary, lemon zest. And it just, you know, gets a little flavor into that chicken. You know, a chicken breast isn't the most exciting thing out there. So you got to do something to it to sort of jazz it up a little bit.
When you do programs like this, mm-hmm. Let's move that microphone up a little bit. When you just a little higher, I think. There you go. When you do a program like this, do you ever keep back an ingredient and say, well, this secret one is mine. I'm not telling this over the radio.
No, I'm not generally. I'm pretty much an open book. I mean, yeah. the people were always, you know, asked me when the book came out, oh, did you put the fried chicken recipe in there? And I was like, yeah, of course I put the fried chicken recipe in there. I mean, would you buy a book from me without the fried chicken recipe in there?
I got to tell you, you could give me this recipe, and in a million years, I'm not going to make a piece of fried chicken like this. Well, just looking at it, I mean— You see bits of herbs and spices in there. What goes into this beautiful piece of chicken?
So we have a spice mix that we cover the chicken with, which is, you know, salt and black pepper and garlic salt. And, you know, fried chicken is one of those things that you've got to do, you know, a number of times. You know, if you're the home cook, you know, certainly into the dozens before you're going to start to get your equipment right and you get your whole process down. You know, we do it by the ton.
Okay, so what part of the experience, I mean, why do you need it? Is it the temperature, or is it, what are you hoping to learn in those dozens of times before you get it right?
Basically, I mean, one of the keys to fried chicken is obviously getting the oil at the right temperature and keeping it at the right temperature, having enough oil in whatever you're cooking it in so that when you put the chicken in there, you're not dropping the temperature below that which is needed to fry it crispy and as grease-free as possible. And that's all part of the trick. So it takes a little bit of getting used to that. You know, in the book, I have a section on how to fry at home. And there's, you know, depending on how committed you want to get to it, there's some better ways to do it, obviously. Obviously, buying a small tabletop fryer is a great idea, but if you're going to be doing a lot of frying. If you're not going to be doing a lot of frying, it may be overkill, either because of price or because of, you know, you have to keep a few gallons of oil around.
Right.
And you know, another great way is an electric skillet, you know, that has a temperature setting. Yeah. Those work really well, you know, especially one that has, you know, 2-3-inch sides on it. And then, you know, the sort of more old school, less techie way to do it would be just a nice big Dutch oven, something that's going to really hold the heat, you know, on your stove. And it depends on what kind of stove you have. Obviously, a gas stove is a little bit more easier to regulate than an electric stove. So you got to suss that out a little bit. But it's totally doable. Just takes some time to figure out, you know, you got to decide what route you're going to go and explore your equipment.
But again, this is now I'm holding, if you're watching at WAMC.org, I'm actually holding a drumstick here. And this is a pretty much a perfect, like, if you were opening a book and you said fried chicken, this is it.
And you don't textbook drumstick there?
You don't see it in real life, man.
That's right.
I mean, it's not greasy. It hangs together. The crust hangs on there. It's beautifully browned. This is not a 101 level course.
That's a 400 level chicken leg. Right.
Absolutely.
There.
And you notice I've already touched that one, so I get to eat it after the show.
Yours.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Before we get to the spicy stuff, which also knocked me off my feet, let's take a call or two.
Sure.
800-348-2551. Let's go to Rick in Goshen. Rick, you're on with Chef Jasper Alexander.
Hey.
How are you, Rick?
How are you doing, Ray?
Hey.
I haven't spoken to you in a while.
All right. Well, nice to have
is
you back.
Is it really you?
Yeah, it's really me.
It's really you.
Happy New
there
Year.
There you go. Happy New Year, sir. And I hope you had a great Christmas, too.
Oh,
Mr.
Sure.
Jasper, how are you today?
I'm doing great.
All right. I had a quick question. It's not more on the Southern style, but if you could help me with this, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I've got a prime rib roast that I'm getting ready to cook.
Uh-huh.
I've got my broiler pan out. I've got the prime rib ready to go in, and not ready to go in, but I'm looking for preparation and cooking time. If you could help me with that,
so
is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. We can broaden
all
it
right
up here. I can field general questions, no problem.
All right, we're gonna make it general. I know you're more into the Cajun and the Southern, but you know, I know you guys have
okay
enough
oh,
but
yeah, no,
with spices.
I got a broad base.
We're all right.
So the
all
first
right
thing
this
you want to do is.
Thing.
First thing you want to do is get that prime rib out and get it to room temperature. So if you're going to cook it tonight, you should have it out already and let
absolutely
it get to room temperature.
Absolutely, it is.
All right. So I would also go ahead and season it now as well and let that
okay
salt and pepper do its work, you know, for a big piece of meat like
salt,
that.
Salt, pepper, a little garlic.
A lot of salt.
Hello.
More salt than you think you're going to need. You really want to cover that.
A lot
big
of
piece
salt
of meat like that. You really want to cover it.
All right.
You know,
sea salt is okay, but use a little
great
less.
Not a ton less. I mean, kosher salt is sort of the, you know, not to name drop, but there's a brand out there that's sort of the industry standard. So I don't think I'm
well, I've
devoting
got one
anything
I'm using. It's good.
Yeah. So, you
I've
know,
got
just,
one.
You know, give it a real nice covering with salt and pepper and let it sit for a couple hours. And then, you know, how do you like your prime rib? How do you like your beef cooked?
Medium rare to medium, not quite, you know, I want it barking.
Yeah,
you know
okay
what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd pull it out at probably 100 and 130 degrees, which seems a little low, but it's gonna rest up. You know, once you take it out of the oven, you're gonna want to let it rest for, you know, a piece of meat like that. How many pounds is it? Like,
okay, 120, 130 inside, middle. You know, okay.
Yeah.
We're looking at 5.15, 5.20 pounds.
It's a good size.
So, yeah. So that's
what, about 350.
Yeah, 350
minutes a pound.
350, 375, and if you have a cheap internal thermometer is a good thing to have around the kitchen because, you know, of course, you know.
I've got one.
Yeah, so you just want to, you know, hit the middle of it. When the middle of it's, you know, at that, you know, 120, 130 mark, at, you know, I'd pull it out and let it rest for half an hour or so, and it's going to be fantastic.
Okay.
All right, Rick, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Chef Jasper Alexander of Hattie's Restaurant is our guest today. We talk Southern comfort food. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. Ordinarily, when I do Vox Pop, I have flop sweat, but today I have sweat from spicy food. And I got to tell you, Jasper Alexander, the spicy chicken sandwich it's almost insidious in that it's kind of sweet and just only lightly spicy at the beginning.
But it creeps up on you.
Oh, baby. Up on you. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So it's a sort of Nashville-style hot chicken, which is really popular all around and started by a restaurant that we get confused with. And I don't know if they get confused with us, but there's a Hattie B's in Nashville, which sort of, not they weren't the originators of it, but it started in Nashville. So it's sort of dubbed Nashville hot chicken.
Yeah.
And it's a dip that we put the chicken into that we make with oil and just an absurd amount of cayenne pepper and brown sugar and chili powder and onion powder and black pepper and a few other things. And it's just, you know, it makes this sort of oil sludge almost. And it doesn't sound appetizing, but we scoop the hot chicken down in there and then let all the spices sort of soak into the chicken when it's really hot. And, you know, if you like spicy things, it does the trick for sure.
It's really good. And so you brought some actual pieces of chicken.
We did.
In the same
stuff. Totally changes the color. I mean, it's hard, but it, you know, takes it from a standard fried chicken with color to sort of a ruby amber color.
It's beautiful.
You know?
It's beautiful color. Yeah.
And it'll get you if you it has, like I said, it has a creeping effect. So you start eating it and you think you're all right, and then about the time you're halfway through the sandwich or the chicken, then it starts to, you know, starts to do its thing.
I got to be honest with you, it would go pretty good with a cold beer.
it does go better with a beer.
Jasper Alexander is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. Southern cooking today on the program. Let's go to Amy in Queensbury. Amy, you're on.
Hey, Jasper. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Amy. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Fantastic.
I had a quick question about collard greens.
Sure.
I love collard greens, and I love a big hot pot of it in the wintertime. And with the snowstorm coming in, I'm making a big pot this weekend.
There you go.
However, I veganize it by taking out the ham hock and adding liquid smoke.
Okay.
And I prep all of my collards. I clean them, you know, and then I saute my garlic and my onions. Uh-huh. I add my stock.
Yep.
I season my stock with the liquid smoke, sprinkle of crushed red pepper, and then I add my collard greens.
Yep.
And as it starts cooking down, I add more stock as I go along.
Sure.
Is there a different method that I can do that won't make me a slave over my stove all day?
I mean, you can.
Because I'm constantly, like, watching it, you know?
And adding more stock. I mean, so you make a vegetable stock for it? Or you use vegetable stock?
Yeah,
so down. No, I mean you're right on track.
Done,
I mean, I think your method sounds good. It sounds great. I mean, I don't think you're doing anything wrong. You could start adding the collards in first after you saute your onions and your garlic, and then add the stock to that. So you sort of the collards will start to break down a little bit, and you'll sort of get a gauge for, you know, how much volume in the pot they're going to take, and therefore how much stock you need to put in. And then they'll also break down less at that point. They've sort of done the breaking down that they're going to do by and large at that point. So it won't shy of your stock boiling down and your pot becoming dry. You're not going to have to keep adding stock as much. So if you take it to the point where you've got your collards in there and you put your stock in there and you bring that up to a simmer and the stock is, say, right about the level at the top of the greens, if you put a lid on it so you sort of reduce the evaporation and turn it down real low, you could walk away, you know, for sure.
Okay. Yeah, I tried doing it in Instapot, and it came out terrible.
Yeah.
And even in a Crock-Pot, I tried it.
Crock-Pots are too slow. I'm not a huge fan of Crock-Pots. I mean, they have their place.
You make a nice pulled pork in there.
My wife and I have a joke that it's the I give up pot, which is a little harsh, but it takes, you know, I mean, they're great for some things. They're great for beans. They're great for, you know, you might be able to make a decent chili in them or a soup in them or something
pork
like
is great
and
in there.
And I totally get and understand and appreciate the convenience of them, being able to safely put something on a counter when you leave for work and come back and have it done. So for that, they're great.
But, right.
You know, braising is a more complicated, you know, one of the more complicated cooking methods, and which is what a crock pot is sort of trying to emulate. And it just sort of dumbs it down a little bit. But they definitely have their place. We have one. We use it. So I'm not,
okay.
You know, I'm not above it. And they definitely have their place. But.
All right, Amy, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jasper Alexander is our guest. You know, when I was growing up, I don't believe my mother ever once served collards.
I mean,
down south, it's enormous.
Yeah,
I think some people around here go for it.
Oh, they're everywhere. I mean, which I was so surprised at, but they're at the, you know, local grocery stores up in Saratoga, and I'm sure they're down here. I was just at one of the Asian food markets up the street, and they had them. I mean, they're, you know, it's a big, hearty winter green. It's economical. It's, you know, it feeds a lot. They don't break down a ton. They're good for you. So, I mean, it's a great option.
And is it popular over at the shop?
Oh, yeah. By the caseload, yeah.
You do coleslaw, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the Chicken Shack we do. In the summertime at Hattie's downtown, we do coleslaw, but in the wintertime we take it off and replace it with things like candied yams and
How do you do
like
the
that.
Coleslaw? This is a very important question.
So we have a few coleslaws, so it depends. So we have a vinegar-based coleslaw, which is a cranberry coleslaw, which has, you know, no mayonnaise in it. It's just all vinegar-based, cranberry, salt and pepper, sugar. And then we do a spicy coleslaw, which is a mayonnaise-based coleslaw, which is similar things. And, you know, one trick with coleslaw is to... So, sort of like you do with eggplant, salt the cabbage a little bit ahead of time, let it sit, and that salt will start to sort of react and pull some of the moisture out, and then squeeze it in between your hands and squeeze out all that moisture, and then you won't have that sort of watering it down effect to the same degree that you would if you did not do that. So that's
right.
One of the things with coleslaw is you get it tasting right, and then an hour and a half later, all the water's been leached out of the cabbage from the seasonings and things that you put in the coleslaw, and the whole texture and the flavor is different. So if you do that step first, squeeze out that moisture, then make the coleslaw, it'll
be more stable.
It'll change less as it weeps out the moisture.
Jasper Alexander is our guest. It's Food Friday, Southern Cooking today on the program. 800-348-2551, the number, and Ellen in Shaftesbury. Ellen, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks. I have a question about filling for king cake.
Uh-huh.
I want to make a king cake. I've never made one before.
Okay.
And I want to do a sort of a north meets south thing with sweet potatoes and maple syrup.
Okay.
And I just want to run it. I just want to get some ideas about how to actually make a filling.
So,
hang on. Before you start, can you tell me what this king of cakes is, sir?
So the king cake is a traditional Mardi Gras cake, and it's basically just a sort of a sweet dough. It's a very plain cake, often rolled sort of like a cinnamon roll, but has, you know, a little bit of cinnamon in there and sugar, and then you use a very standard sort of cornstarch icing, and generally you use some colored sugar, some, you know, red, gold, and green sugar. And the thing with the king cake is that you put a little, you got to be careful with this, but you put a little plastic, you know, toy baby somewhere in the cake.
What?
And then, yeah.
What's that about?
Sounds a little weird, I know, but it's what they do. Put a little baby in there, and then if you get the piece with the baby in it, then you've got good luck.
That's disturbing. But anyway, go on.
It is a little. So I would just, when you get your dough laid out, you know, you could take, you know, I would, if you're going to try sweet potato, I would roast the sweet potatoes and then puree them in a food processor or a blender or something like that, so it's nice and smooth and you concentrate that flavor. And then if you're going to do, you know, some nuts, which go great with sweet potatoes, obviously maybe toast the pecans since they're not going to get any direct heat if they're inside that dough. And then, you know, just do a thin, I would not go too heavy with the layer is the key. I would keep it thin.
Okay.
Because if you go too much, there's even if you roast it, there's still going to be quite a bit of moisture in that sweet potato puree, and that could end up, you know, messing up your dough if you put on too thick of a layer.
Okay. And is there any way to incorporate bacon?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
More bacon, more better.
You had me at bacon.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sprinkle bacon all over it. Sure. I mean, there's no, you know, people are mixing sweet and savory elements in food is becoming more and more common. So, you know, I've done, you know, bacon cinnamon rolls at the restaurant before and things like that. And, you know, people go get silly.
Would you put the bacon inside?
Yeah, I would put it inside. Yeah, definitely. You could also, you could also take some and sprinkle it while the icing, after you pour the icing on, but before it sets, sprinkle some right on top. You know, some bacon right on top.
That sounds amazing.
You know, sort of like they do when you see bacon donuts here and there. And that's generally what they do with that. They'll ice them, and then while the icing's still wet and able to hold on to something, they'll sprinkle some bacon over the top of it.
Okay, and so back to the sweet potato. You don't think that I need to make, like, a puree that has eggs and stuff in it?
I don't think so. I think a small layer. I mean, you could add an egg to it just to help it to set a little bit, but I think the you know it's going to absorb into the dough a little bit, and I think it'll turn out nice.
All right, I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
Let us know how you did. Thank you for the call, Ellen. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Jasper Alexander is our guest. Jasper is chef and co-owner of Hattie's Restaurant in Saratoga Springs. And then you have another location, which is a walk-in.
Yeah, we have a quick service location in Wilton, which, you know, just up the road, about 3 miles away from the downtown store. And that's sort of the fast casual side. After we opened up the Chicken Shack at the track, almost probably 11 years ago now, we saw that there was a different way to spin the concept. And so we took the plunge and did another restaurant.
Be honest with me. Now, I know that it's cash cow, the track season. How pleased are you when the meat is done?
When the meat is done, it is a nice feeling. It's. I mean, it definitely changes the whole dynamic of the town. So it's. Yeah. I mean, it's a shift on many levels, and you know, I think, you know, obviously the Saratoga, the restaurants and the retailers all, you know, get a big boost from the track being there, and it's a great, you know, symbiosis, you know, situation we got there. And but it is a nice relief when it's done too. It's a complicated time of year for most of us in Saratoga that time of year.
Very busy. I think you've been here just post track season, and you looked a little tired.
Yeah, generally, yeah. And it doesn't, you know, there's the wedding season. You know, we do a ton of catering and weddings, and the wedding season stretches. You know, October is getting to be one of the hottest months, and September is busy with catering. So, you know, it doesn't really end. I mean, the real craziness ends, but we don't downshift too hard. You know, now is that when the downshifting happens. You know,
all right.
You know, January with 2 feet of snow on the way.
So you get some decompressing in this weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's that silver lining. 800-348-2551 is the number if you want to talk to Jasper Alexander. JD in Springfield, Mass. JD, you're on.
Hi, guys. I just really love your program, and all these things sound absolutely delicious. However, I listen to all these lovely fried things, and then I have to ask the question, like, do you use canola oil? Because I'm among those that canola doesn't seem to agree with.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess that's what I have to just keep on doing, because some people use it in their frying thing and some don't. So, I'll get all, like, juicy and mouth-watery, and it sounds delicious, and then... Okay, thanks. Anyhow.
No, you definitely do not need to use canola oil. At the restaurant, we do use canola oil. It's a mixture of corn, canola, and sunflower oil. And
I know Monsanto made the canola for us.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Lovely them. But you definitely don't need to use canola. Corn oil works great. Any sort of vegetable oil will be fine.
My mystery is I'm not cooking. I'm just like going to like at the deli or whatever.
Right.
And they have all this good-looking stuff, and it looks good. And then they have this whole wings bar that I can select from.
Sure.
But it's all canola oil, so it's like, okay, back to the block.
It's a pretty widely used oil. I mean, it does the trick for the professional frying. I mean,
it's high
stable.
Smoke point is really important. But however, my 2 weeks of death doesn't.
Thank you for sharing, though, all of a sudden.
But I'm still trying to eat nice things, you know, and I love the hot wings and all that sort of stuff. But I've been protected because they don't, whatever.
Yeah.
So anyhow, but your stuff sounds absolutely wonderful.
We'd love
and
to see
so I like the recipes, and I'm able to share all that.
I know we have plenty of things that aren't fried, too. So.
Is that spicy recipe in your book? The recipe for the chicken?
No, it's not. That came after the book.
That's a great... Yeah, JD, yeah. If you like the spicy stuff.
I had to think
stuff,
about that for a second, but no, it's not in the book.
Yeah, this is... And run that down for her really quickly again.
The
trick to your spicy sauce.
To the spicy chicken? So, yeah, it's a mixture of oil and then cayenne pepper, brown sugar, chili powder, black pepper, onion powder, garlic salt, regular salt, and then, you know, we make this sort of... oil spice slurry, for lack of a better word, and then sort of slide the chicken through there and let it just sort of drip off and absorb into the chicken.
It's heavenly, JD. It's good stuff.
Okay, now I'm heavenly salivating. So, anyhow, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot for the call. Have a great weekend. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Jasper Alexander is our guest. Now, I think the last time you were here, you know, my memory is terrible.
Yeah.
But I think the last time you were here, was it just before or just after you went down to New Orleans?
Probably just after. I think we came in one or two times since then. But that was a blast. We did not go back and do it this year, not because we weren't invited. It was just you know, too much of an endeavor, and the timing didn't work out. We had a couple of big caterings, you know, it's quite a process to bring a restaurant, you know, 1,700 miles south and then reset up to feed
for a few days, right?
10,000 people for a couple of days.
Now, what did you learn, though? Anything that you brought back to Saratoga?
We brought back, you know, certainly the great spirit of New Orleans and you know, thumping through our souls. And we had a great time with the crew. You know, 8 of us came down and you know, all of which have been with me for a long time.
You rented a house.
And we rented a house and we just did the town up and had a great time. And, you know, the one takeaway was that, you know, the market in New Orleans for chicken certainly is different. Obviously, our chicken is, you know, at the top of the list with everybody in the country, and we always make these lists, which is great, and which is one of the reasons why we were brought down. But it was just the whole, you know, there's fried chicken everywhere in New Orleans. I mean, gas station fried chicken. Every
gas station. It can't all be good, though. This was kind of where I was getting with it.
It's all pretty good, you know, honestly. I mean, yeah, you can draw some lines in the sand and sort of start to put a hierarchy together. But, you know, fried chicken's it's the people's food, you know, so it's always good to have it around.
I've had bad fried chicken, though. This is what I'm saying. Just because it's southern fried chicken doesn't mean it's good.
Well, that's a fact. That's a fact. You got to, you know, it's got to be good chicken out of the gate. You got to take care of it through the process. You got to make sure it doesn't sit around too long and can't be greasy. You know, that comes with oil temperature. And it's, you know, we just had a fabulous time.
So you're not going back, though?
No, we might go back. We tried to make it work. It just wasn't schedule-wising. It just wasn't going to work this year.
Budgetary-wise, it must be a little difficult,
budgetary-wise, yeah, it's not. It's definitely not a
moneymaker.
Not a huge moneymaker. So, you know, you gotta pick and choose your battles.
Well, our number here is 800-348-2551. The great Jasper Alexander is here. He's fed the staff, and we have food to talk about. We have food to try, including some dessert. Tell you what, Zach, let's take a break here, and then we'll get back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number, and we'll be right back. Buddy Emmons on the old steel guitar there, and every time I hear it, now I don't think he was doing the soundtrack to Beverly Hillbillies, but every time I hear it, I think of Jethro wanting the red-eye gravy with biscuits, and I think, Jasper, you have been on and described for me what red-eye gravy actually is. I've never had it, but every time Jethro talks about it, man, I want to get some biscuits, I want to try it. What is it?
Such a great show. Red Eye gravy is a very thin gravy you make with hand drippings and coffee.
Oh god!
So it's really salty and briny and good and thin.
Do you ever make it? Like it?
Oh yeah.
So maybe next time you come,
well,
6 months or whatever.
Yeah, we can do some. We can bring some ham.
Gotta have
Red Eye gravy. Sure.
All right, a couple of emails and then we'll get back to the phones. Oh, by the way, before that, this dessert is ridiculous. What is it, man?
So this is a beignet, which is another New Orleans classic. Café du Monde is the, you know, the sort of the epicenter of the beignet. I think ours honestly are just as good, but you know, I am a little biased. So basically it's just a sort of, they call it a French market donut. It's a basic yeast dough, you know, flour, evaporated milk or condensed milk, sorry, yeast, and you let it rise and you roll it out and cut them and fry them and douse them in tons of powdered sugar.
This is one of the best things I've ever had.
And they're great. I mean, they're good cold, but they're really good when they're hot and right out of the fryer.
So how, I mean, how hot is the medium, and how long are you frying this to get it like this is perfect?
So they take about 3-4 minutes. I mean, they don't take very long. You gotta either gotta put, you know, some in a basket and then put another basket on top of that and totally submerge them, or you've got to fry them and they'll puff up, so you got to flip them over to get both sides. But they're really good.
They're
just the right amount of sweetness, and you know, the powdered sugar is fun.
Once we get back to the phones, I'll finish mine. But let's have an email here. This one's from Alex in Latham. Would Hattie's ever take on breakfast-style foods like chicken and waffles or a twist on biscuits and gravy? Also, why are Southern breakfast foods so heavy? You'd think they're trying to put you back to sleep.
Well, we do both of those things, because we do brunch at Hattie's on Saturdays and Sundays.
Chicken and waffles. What's the deal?
We do chicken and waffles at dinner now, too.
Okay, now, hang on. I've seen pictures of this, and it looks like your typical piece of chicken with on a waffle. How am I going to eat a drumstick with a waffle?
It is that simple.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm going to be honest with you, but it is super popular, and people dig it. It's you know, it's sort of it's just an old, you know, a lot of times you'll get a piece of white bread served with fried chicken, so this is sort of a breakfast twist on that. And it is, you know, we serve it at brunch and have from the get go. And then it's popular enough that we ran it as a special for dinner a few nights, and people enjoyed that, so we just put it on the menu. So now you can get chicken and waffles at Hattie's for brunch or for dinner.
I don't get
it. And we do biscuits and gravy, too, with a local sausage maker, and we make the sausage, and obviously we make all our biscuits fresh every day. And
I want some of that
delicious
red-eye gravy, Granny.
Yeah, the biscuits and gravy with a fried egg on top is a good thing.
And then Alex's second question, why are Southern breakfast foods so heavy?
I think it's just the way it's always been. I mean, it's a lot of good farm work down there. You got to put on a hearty meal out of the gate.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, you know, I mean, the kind of things we're talking about, biscuits and gravy, they're cheap to make, you know, and that was a lot of it. It's an economics.
All right. This one is from Dave in Voorheesville. I've been trying to recreate my granny's pimento cheese dish with mixed results. Everyone I've asked has a different take on this. Is there a traditional, simple, I hope, recipe for pimento cheese, or is this always a dish of individual expression? And that's from Dave in Voorheesville. Dave, I'm with you. This pimento cheese thing. Ever since this guy was first on the show, I'm crazy about it.
We take our pimento cheese pretty seriously, that's for sure. So there is, my recipe is pretty simple. Actually, even some members of my own family think it's too simple. My uncle, you know, thinks there needs to be jalapeno in there.
I
disagree.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So our pimento cheese is just, you know, you want to start with a good quality cheddar cheese. Extra sharp, I think, at least. I think sharp is not sharp enough. Yellow or white doesn't really make too much of a difference. We make it with a white cheddar, a white extra sharp cheddar. You can either, you know, get a little jar of pimentos right out of the store, or you can roast a pepper yourself, you know, either in your oven or on top of your stove, and peel it. Either way works just fine. And a little grated onion and salt and pepper and mayonnaise, and that's all we put in ours.
It's the best thing.
And it's really good. You just got to make sure, and the onion, the other tip I would say is grate the onion. If you grate the onion, you get some of that onion juice as well as little fragments of onion, and that gives it a nice, you know, depth of flavor with the onion without it, you know, sort of beating you over the head.
I found one in the grocery store because, again, now I'm an addict,
right.
And I found one that is, there are several brands, but the one brand I found, I forget the name of it, it's good, but every time I try it, I'm like, it's not Jasper's.
It's super easy to make. Yeah. It's super easy. And it lasts, you know, in the refrigerator. If you make it, you keep it refrigerated, I mean, it'll last a week, you know. So, you know, you can make yourself a couple of cups of it and keep it in the fridge and, you know, keep your box of Triscuits close.
Jasper Alexander is here. Back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551. Fontaine in Hudson.
Hi. Oh,
hi.
How are you, Fontaine?
I'm good. I'm very good. Thank
great.
You so much. How are you guys?
Good.
We're great.
Okay, I have two little questions. One is, I want to know how Jasper made it. Are you from Louisiana? And if so, how'd you end up in Saratoga?
So I am not from Louisiana. I was born in D.C. My whole family is from the South, from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and from Lexington, North Carolina. And now pretty much everybody but my family and my mom is still spread out all over the South. I was born in D.C. I spent about half my childhood on both coasts, on the, you know, far east and far right coast. And then I was working in New York and was on my way back out west and came to Saratoga to work at Ciro's, actually, in another restaurant in Saratoga, a seasonal restaurant that's since changed owners in the time that I've been there. So it's not quite the same restaurant anymore. And I met my wife, and we went out west for about 5 years, 6 years together. And then she was homesick, and I was at a crossroads professionally, and so was she. And we had just had our first child, and she had this epiphany that she wanted to come back and buy Hattie's. And we spent about a year apart when I first moved out west, and she was actually working at Hattie's at the time. And so it sort of always stuck in the back of her head. And she said, I want to do this. And I said, okay. And then back we came. And we've been here now we've been back for close to 20 years now.
It was meant to be, apparently. Well, yeah. I grew up in Louisiana, so I have a... even though I wasn't born there, I grew up there, and I definitely love the food. I wanted to ask you, the chicken that you were referring to, that you were sort of dousing with the olive oil or dragging it through the, not olive oil, the oil, the spiced oil.
Yep.
That's not fried chicken that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely is fried chicken. Yep.
Fried chicken, then.
So we take it. Yeah, we take it when it's still hot right out of the fryer. And then dip it in this other oil mixture, which is also hot, not cooking hot, but it's hot and temperature wise as well as spice wise. And then
you're actually submerging it in
exactly,
the oil.
Yeah, and it's so because the chicken's so hot, it doesn't soak it up like you think it was. I mean, it definitely coats it. Okay. It definitely gets drawn into the skin and the meat and underneath the skin, but it doesn't make it greasy in any way. So,
okay,
as long as you don't leave it, if you left it to soak in there, obviously it would. But
yeah.
This is just a quick in and out.
Really good, Fontaine. And thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. And let's go to Emily in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Emily, you're on with Jasper Alexander.
Hello. I just wanted to comment. I heard Jasper say that in New Orleans, like, there's fried chicken even in gas stations. And then Ray said, yeah, but it can't all be good.
No. Go ahead.
Well,
you go first.
I was in New Orleans like 40 years ago at Mardi Gras in 1979. And one thing I can say when I was there, and we were right in the quarter, was every little dive had the most amazing food.
Yeah,
like,
for
you
sure.
could go into a coffee shop or, you know, places that in most towns I would say, you're just going to get what you get.
Yeah.
And, like, their chicken and dumplings would be to die for.
Yeah, definitely.
And I remember commenting to a local person there about that, and she said, yeah, isn't it good everywhere you go? So I just wondered if Jasper saw that when he was in New Orleans.
Absolutely. I mean, we ate at a number of different restaurants. We were down there, and I've been to New Orleans quite a few times, and probably heading back in October. And you know, the general level of food is very high across the board. I mean, you know, some of this gas station fried chicken is actually good.
Yeah.
Some of it is not.
Yeah.
But little hole in the walls, places that you might, you know, walk by and not even look in, you know, give it a second look, you know, will have some of the best food.
Exactly. I mean, I didn't eat in a gas station, but we ate at some, like, breakfast places and lunch counters, and I didn't have much money at the time.
Yeah.
Is Buster's still there? Red Beans and Rice?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about Buster's, but Red Beans and Rice is certainly everywhere.
There was this, it was like a poor person's restaurant, and
right.
for very little money, you could get amazing red beans and rice and greens and sausage and stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's how I think of New Orleans.
It's a great
gas station chicken might be good.
All right.
Yeah,
well, next time you're down there, Emily, let me know. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. There's certainly some psychological aspect to this. In other words, if I go to a place that's known for seafood, and every place has seafood,
yep.
seafood's going to be pretty good. But
yes.
part of that is me going, oh, yeah, right. this seafood's good.
And I mean, any town, there's a bunch of them. I mean, New Orleans is one of them. L.A., New York, any town where there's a big food scene. You know, and even this applies locally, too. I mean, it's been true in Saratoga. You know, the food scene is much, much different and much more elevated than it was when I first got there. And so there's a certain need to sort of, you know, keep everything, you know, up. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's fancy, but the level needs
competition,
you need to stay, you need to keep sharp and keep your game on. And so no one's going to, you know, anybody that's taking pride in their work is going to put up slop. So,
yeah.
You know, you gotta put out the best product you can. And I think that sort of transects the economics of different restaurants, you know.
Can you find a good German restaurant down there?
Probably there's great Vietnamese restaurants down
there.
Yeah? Yeah, really, really good Vietnamese food.
Let's go back to the phones here. 800-348-2551. Jasper Alexander of Hattie's Restaurant fame is here. Mohammed in Schenectady. Mohammed, you're on.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
There is a place in New York City. It's called Texas Fried Chicken.
Uh-huh.
And they also have, when they came up with this idea the first time, chicken over Whopper, it was like, you know how some people love the Chinese food and the fried chicken?
Right.
The chicken is like really fried.
Right.
And you put the sweet stuff on it. So
yep.
That's what basically it tastes like. But the other thing is that you add up the waffles. So a waffle is like a bread right next to you, or
exactly.
Like a dinner roll right next to you.
That's right.
But it's nice and crispy.
That's correct. And we put a little spicy sauce on our fried chicken waffle too. It's a maple honey spicy. Maple
so you
honey
actually
drizzle.
Have like a maple type sauce on the waffle.
Yep.
That's so weird, man.
No, actually, it's like sesame chicken. You put your sesame chicken, crispy sesame chicken.
Right.
That's what it basically tastes like. But the only difference is that make it tasty more when you have the waffle right there next to it instead of dinner rolls.
Correct.
A crispy waffle right there next to it, and you just take it. It doesn't sound fancy, but it's good food.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know what? You guys are selling me on this. Well, thank you, Mohammed, for the call. Have a good weekend. 800-348-2551 is our number. I guess you probably know this out at home, but there's going to be a storm on Saturday, and it's going to go into Sunday. Winter storm warnings are up, and I advise you to keep the radio kind of half-tuned to WAMC all the time. But this weekend, we will have weather updates for you throughout the weekend, so stick around. Let's go back to the phones. Valerie in Saratoga. Valerie, you're on.
Hi. I have a real general question.
Sure.
And it has to do with when you're making like a roast chicken or a roast. That whole resting stage of it just seems not logical to me, because all I can think of is this meat is getting colder and colder on my counter.
not the case. So you've got, for instance, let's just take the Thanksgiving turkey, for instance. Like, I'll let my Thanksgiving turkey sit out on the counter once it's done for like an hour.
Yeah.
You know, this is like a 18 to 22 pound bird. And it is still piping hot. And so what it does when you cook any larger piece of meat, any piece of meat really, but the effects of this are magnified the larger the piece of meat is, it drives all those juices, natural juices, in towards the center of the piece of meat that you're cooking. And then once you take it out of the oven, that muscle starts to relax, and all that juice starts to come back out and redistribute throughout the whole piece of meat. So when you let something rest, the other factor to keep in mind too is the temperature is going to rise for about another 10 or 15 minutes, depending on the size of the piece of meat. After you pull it out of the oven, it's going to continue to rise for a little bit. So that's why you want to let it rest for at least, 15, 20 minutes. If you're talking a steak, like an 8, 10-ounce steak, maybe it's 4 to 5 minutes. But if you're talking a roast, say a 3 to 5 pound roast, you might want to let rest for 15 to 20 minutes. If it's bigger than that, you should add more time to it. And it really allows the muscle to relax and all the juice to sort of redistribute throughout the whole bird, and just makes for a lot better product.
All right, I'm going to roast that chicken on Sunday.
So roast that chicken.
What else are you going to do?
So, yeah, roast that chicken.
If it's on the counter.
Yep. Absolutely. Put it on the counter and cover it loosely with a piece of tin foil, just like a blanket. Just lay it over the top. You don't need to wrap it up or anything like that. And let it sit there.
Okay.
If it's, say it's a 4 pound chicken-ish, average, let that rest for like 15 minutes and you will be satisfied.
Wow. Valerie, thank you for that. And Jasper, thank you for that answer. You've now explained to me the physics of the whole thing.
That is the M.K. Fisher explanation right there.
Because oftentimes, like, I'll do a big London broil. We will have marinated the London broil, and I'll do it out on the grill. And my wife will say, okay, we're covering this lightly, and it's going to rest. And I say, it'll be cold. But it never is.
It never is.
Amazing.
Yeah. It holds meat holds its temperature for a while. So you've got, a few hours. Yeah, it's going to be, room temperature. But... For the bigger the piece of meat, the longer you want to let it rest.
Astonishing. Now I understand. Let's go to Rhonda in Niskayuna. Rhonda.
Hi. So I want to sell you on chicken and waffles
differently. Okay.
I was
going through the South and trying the best chicken and waffle places I could find, and one of them admitted on its menu in a long story that it's actually from Harlem. And of course, fried chicken is from the South, but the chicken and waffles was an after-hours musician's food at places that stayed open after the jazz musicians were done, and they'd go, and the place had the breakfast menu, but they had leftovers from the night before, so they put it together, and that's the origin of chicken and waffles.
That's I did not know that. That's great. That's great to know. I mean, I knew that it was popular, you know, more in New York and L.A., not necessarily a Southern thing. That's great. That's a great story.
I do think the menu of the place that I went actually had the name of the actual originating restaurant. That there was one. You know, one guy who did it, and that's where it all came from.
That's cool.
Amazing.
And now we're all ripping them off.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Rhonda, thanks for the call.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Have a good weekend. And that's interesting. Of course, you know, a lot of times on a menu, people will make up stories.
Oh,
that's
absolutely
only thing. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. But it might
I
be
think
true.
That's as good a story as any. I mean, I'd like it to be true. It sounds good.
See,
it
doesn't make sense to me. Okay, I'm sorry.
It doesn't make sense. You're having
you
trouble
got a
getting
bone
over.
In chicken.
You got, I'm bringing you chicken and waffles next time. But, I mean, obviously, that's a must do.
Okay, but so, if you had a piece of chicken like you make with your chicken sandwich,
right?
No bone in that.
Yeah.
You put it on a waffle, put another waffle on the other side, then you got a waffle sandwich.
We have done a fried chicken.
That makes sense to me. But having a just a drumstick on a waffle,
well, I like
you got to take
Muhammad,
it off
Muhammad,
to eat it.
Muhammad had a point. I mean, you know, it's sort of, you know, acts as a dinner roll, so it's a little crunchy, it's a little sweet. You like the sweet and the hot thing. So you know, you put a little drizzle of something, you know, something waffle sauce type stuff on there, maple syrup or something like that, you know.
All right, well, maybe next time
it
we'll
is
try
good.
That.
I'll bring chicken and waffles next time. I'll log that away.
Anything new that we can expect on the menu coming up in 2019?
I don't know. I mean, we just redid the menu about a month ago or so, maybe 5 weeks ago, and this will carry us into the springtime. You know, up here in the Northeast, not that you can't get anything any time of year. I mean, this is America, but we try to keep things seasonal, and so, you know, we'll do our next change in the spring. Spring's always one of my favorite time to cook because, you know, once you get into that late spring, early summer, you know, everything starts to come up, and there's a whole bunch of fun spring options: English peas and fiddlehead ferns and ramps and, you know, things like
so
that.
So, are you actually foraging for this stuff? I mean,
I don't have time to forage.
But no, but you're finding people who are bringing you this
stuff. Absolutely. Yeah, ramps, you know, the same guy I've been getting my corn and maple syrup and cucumbers from the same guy for many, many years, and he's got quite a bit of property out by Salem, and he'll bring me, you know, ramps by the bus tub full. You
that'll
know?
Drive the overhead up at the shop, huh?
Yeah, well, they're good. You know, they only are around for a little time of year, and you can pickle them and do stuff with them, and you know, they're fun.
Well, one question before we go about your location.
Yeah.
So Wilton is pretty close to Saratoga.
Correct.
Any chance that you move a little closer to, say, 318 Central?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're sort of in a expansion pause now. You know, my daughter just went off to college. I've got a son in middle school, and
that'll
pause
things.
So we're trying to keep things in perspective and not you know, we want the restaurant business can be all consuming at times, especially in a seasonal town where it really ebbs and flows, and so we like to stay busy, but we also like our downtime. We have things we like to do. You know, I like to ski a lot and spend time with the family and travel. And so, you know, I don't want to do anything that offsets the balance too much. And we sort of we say no to a lot of things. Right now we're just sort of in a holding pattern. But in a couple of years we'll see. Once the kids are away, you know, we'll relook at things. But we're always looking. You know, if the right thing comes along, we're always looking and always willing to discuss things. So if the right thing comes along, you never know.
How do people find you guys on the web?
Well, websites. I mean, we're
that would be a good spot on the web, I suppose.
Hattiesrestaurant.com is probably the most direct way, and Hattie's Chicken Shacks plural.com for the chicken shack. Even though there's only one now, but we did the plural just, you know, to own it and make sure that, you know, we can keep it going.
Jasper Alexander, wonderful job. Beautiful food, man. Support comes from Big Elm Brewing. Tap room open Thursday through Sunday, noon to 7 p.m. Crafting ales and lagers in Sheffield, Massachusetts since 2012. BigElmBeer.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butterscratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, BlackSheepDeli.com. and the Stagecoach Tavern at Racebrook Lodge, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Live jazz brunch on Sundays, fireside dining and overnight packages, hiking, yoga, live music, campfires, and more. StagecoachTavern.net. Thanks again to Jasper Alexander for being with us today. Thank you for listening and for the great calls. Thanks to engineer Zach Malloy, who has now been well sated. Good food, yeah? Yeah. Dina Salzman took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. You know, it's going to snow, people. Hunker down. Stand by your radio. Have a safe, happy weekend. Don't drive if you can avoid it. We'll see you on Monday.